Another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin. And as we announced during our coverage of The Last of Us finale, my co-host and counterpart, Barrett Dudley, will not be joining me today as he is in Asia on important Oystar Clam Co. business, getting some altitude on things. Mr. Dudley will be back with me this Thursday for our first Patreon-exclusive episode of this Succession season, where we'll take hotline calls from listeners to further digest and discuss this week's episode. If you'd be good enough to support our podcast in exchange for exclusive ad-free content, go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where we'll be diving deeper into every episode each week with further analysis, which, as I said, is fueled by hotline calls from Oystar Clam Co. board members, as they are known. That's patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, and thank you to all 1,300-plus of our Oystar Clam Co. stockholders and board members there already supporting our show. Hit bolinmedia.com to check out the rest of our company headquartered in Austin, Texas, and go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch like this Oystar Clam Co. hat I have atop my head as I speak. Now, we are here today to discuss Season 4, Episode 1, the final season premiere of Succession, titled The Munsters. First off, I have to say, when that opening title sequence started and the piano hit, I got goosebumps. I'm not the biggest fan of the visuals that accompany it, but there is no denying that Succession's theme song is one of the greatest of all time, an undeniable banger up there with other classic themes like that of Game of Thrones and The White Lotus Season 2. After Nicholas Britell's masterpiece plays, we start Season 4 at Logan Roy's birthday party, which almost mirrors the pilot episode. Although in the pilot, we watch Logan piss in a corner of his domicile and argue with his wife Marcia about the surprise element of the party before eventually getting to it. Present day, though, Connor, the comically terrible presidential candidate, is the only one of Logan's children at his birthday party, and Logan starts the show by wandering around with his quote-unquote friend, assistant, and advisor, Carrie, in tow, judging all of his guests. Elsewhere, Logan's other three children congregate to meet with potential investors in a revolutionary new media brand they're planning to launch called The Hundred. Roman is holding a video meeting with four marketing people who have put together potential logos and graphics for The Hundred when Kendall arrives, and we don't have to wait long to find out what The Hundred entails, as Kendall declares, The Hundred is Substack meets Masterclass meets The Economist meets The New Yorker, which is an absolutely absurd concept that has zero legs, and everyone with a media mind who is watching knows it the second those words come out of his mouth. Roman is not pleased with the presentation of potential logos, stating, I feel like we said iconic, and you guys are leaning ironic. Then Shiv shows up, and Roman tells her she looks tired and her face is giving him a headache. Shiv immediately gives off sketchy Shiv vibes that she may or may not be all in on The Hundred, labeling it a maybe, maybe, maybe situation. And from the jump here, it seems, shockingly, that the Roy children are not, in fact, all on the same page as part of a strategically sound and unified team. As they deal with the clear lack of cohesion, we find out the kids think their dad is 2 days out from selling Waystar, the company, the family company. And Kendall highlights the importance of them all getting on the same page, stating, here's the thing. Here's what you have to understand. I've smoked horse. It's really, really, really fucking nice. And, you know, I need something super fucking absorbing in my life. And if it isn't going to be this, please just let me know, right? Because I feel like I've been flying around the country, having serious fucking conversations with serious people, expending serious personal capital, and getting big fucking names on board. Based on Roman's accompanying chirping about Kendall not being a true junkie because he's afraid of needles. I have to assume horse equals heroin. Apparently, I am not a true junkie either, as I have never even heard the term horse before as it relates to drugs. And also, I fear needles. Roman declares his only worry with the 100 is that it might literally be too good. Like, why hasn't anyone done this before? Which is funny, because it's the most ridiculously generic Frankenstein of a media company idea possible for the human brain to conceive. And since Barrett isn't here today, I'll be the one to say that this reminded me of the scene in Zoolander when Natalie Portman says of Derek, "He's almost too good looking. That would be my main deterrent in considering a relationship." Next, we bounce back to Logan's birthday party, where his guests are singing happy birthday to him, much to his disgust. Munsters. Meet the fucking Munsters, he says, giving us our episode title. Why is he evoking an American sitcom from the 1960s depicting the home life of a family of benign monsters? My best guess is because he's a crabby old geezer who hates everyone around him, and maybe he sees them as benign monsters. The elevator door opens, and in steps cousin Greg, Greg the Egg, who very inappropriately brought a girl who turns out, in Tom's words, to be a bit of a drug-addled cock monster as a date to his grandpa's brother's birthday. Carrie questions Greg about his decision to bring a date, asking her full name. Is it Random Fuck? Bridget Random Fuck? Is she from the apps, Greg? She goes on to explain, we are not a fucking Shake Shack, Greg. This isn't a pre-fuck party. It's a birthday party. We also find out from Carrie that Logan's wife, Marcia, is in Milan shopping forever. So I'm not even sure we should expect to see Marcia this season. Carrie also declares that they're in the middle of a very hotly contested election. Greg's uncle is on the brink of a very large sale and scoping out a very sensitive acquisition, kind of giving us a lay of the episode one land, if you will. Back at Shiv, Roman, and Kendall's meeting, they go over their pitch to potential investors and outline how the 100 is going to redefine news for the 21st century as an indispensable bespoke information hub. And Kendall explains that it will include, quote, the 100 greatest experts, best writers, top minds in every field from Israel-Palestine to AI to Michelin restaurants. One-stop info shop, high-calorie info snacks. Info parcels or info snacks? He asks. None of those make sense, Roman chimes in. And Shiv takes a call from Tom, who is at a bar telling her that he had a drink with Naomi Pierce last night, and just in case of anything, he wanted to inform her or perform the ask of due deference just in case of photos or it getting talked about. Tom really has a way with words. Shiv responds, you know what, it's fine, you're dating my brother's ex. And Tom explains that it's a social, not a sexual thing. This begins a cascade of Shiv declaring it's fine over and over in an overt effort to convince herself that she is fine and everything is fine. She then stumbles back into the meeting with her brothers, irate and extremely rattled from the call. The trio's assistant, Tellis, otherwise referred to as simply T, gets sent outside to find the potential investors they're supposed to be meeting, a journalist to burn with cigarettes while they wait, because clearly Shiv is not in a place to pitch just yet. From here, things start to escalate pretty quickly as the kids attempt to decipher whether or not their dad is attempting to purchase Pierce, why he would purchase Pierce, or if it's just a brain fuck, as they put it. Back at Logan's birthday party, Connor considers sinking another 100 mil into his presidential campaign to maintain his 1% in the polls simply so that he's part of the conversation. Then Tom walks up on Logan meeting with an advisor named Ray, who is in the middle of saying, quote, when it comes to this new venture with GoGo, and if you talk to Mattson, consider, but the conversation is cut short by Tom's presence. So who the hell knows what Logan is attempting to do between potentially selling Waystar, acquiring PGN, and a new venture with GoGo. Tom outlines that, to Logan, that Naomi Pierce, Kendall's ex-girlfriend of sorts thinks that Nan Pierce, the matriarch of the Pierce family, has lost all interest in the business and that Logan has all but closed the deal to acquire PGN, giving him a preemptive congratulations before asking him in so many words what would happen to their relationship, Tom and Logan, should Tom and Shiv get a divorce. And Logan replies, "If we're good, we're good," before abandoning the conversation altogether and declaring Tom has gone off his nut. Logan is on his way to search for food. Speaking of food, if it's hard for you to keep up with the supplemental routine that comes with a bunch of different products like it is for me, or you don't know where to start with supplements or who to trust, today's sponsor, Athletic Greens, makes that so much easier. Why take a bunch of different things when you can mix just one scoop of powder in water once a day? Their flagship product, AG1, was designed with ease in mind so you can live healthier and better without having to do too much. It's the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute for the deal-making media mogul in your life or the everyday grind boy. AG1 has been a part of millions of mornings since 2010, and in my time using it, I've noticed an increase in energy, mood support, and better overall digestion. The goal of Athletic Greens is to make it easier for you to live your best life. If you want better gut health, immune system support, hate taking a bunch of different pills and vitamins every day, and want something that tastes great, AG1 is for you, baby. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dragon. That's athleticgreens.com/dragon to support our show and your body at the same time, like a real executive baller should. Go to athleticgreens.com/dragon now. Back at the Roman Kendall and Shiv brain trust, the kids mull over abandoning the 100 in pursuit of purchasing PGN for $8 or $9 billion instead. Kendall drops this golden rant. If we partner up with our name, with these fucks here, some other pieces of shit, our experience, Shiv the yummy dummy dimmy, my profile as the fearless leader of the good fight, Roman as the dirty little fucker pushing the filth buttons, I mean, I think, yeah, new Jin Roy's. We have a fucking song to sing. So, just to be clear, while the investors they were set to meet with to secure funding for the 100 have not even been allowed inside to meet with them yet, they have already abandoned the idea entirely and have moved on to purchasing a legacy media dinosaur out from under their father's nose simply to spite him and to potentially have some real skin in the power game again. One of my big takeaways from this episode is that these three goofballs still don't have the slightest fucking grasp on reality and are just playing business without a real clue as to what they are actually doing. They're just the same three idiots that they've been for the preceding three seasons. Back at Logan's birthday party, Tom informs Greg that everyone at the party is laughing up their sleeves at him for having brought a date with a ludicrously capacious bag. What's even in there? Tom asks. Flats for the subway? Her lunch pail? I mean, Greg, it's monstrous. It's gargantuan. You could take it camping. You could slide it across the floor after a bank job. And with that, Tom remains one of the quippiest characters on TV. Greg responds by saying, whatever, she's another tick on the chart, and then closes our first unbelievable Greg and Tom moment of the season when he labels them the Disgusting Brothers. Apparently, these two morons have been running around banging models and whatnot together and labeling themselves the Disgusting Brothers, which is just perfect. Or maybe it's the tabloids that labeled them that. I'm unclear. Tom goes on to say Greg's date is, quote, wolfing all the canapes like a famished warthog. Just then, Greg's date walks up and says maybe they should go because she asked Logan for a selfie. Logan declares to his girlfriend assistant that he isn't going to sit around like a C-word waiting for that old crone Nan Pierce to make her decision, and summons his apparent best friend and bodyguard, Colin, to walk to a restaurant with him, abandoning his own birthday party and guests. Back at the Triumvirate of Terrible Decision-Making, T informs the three that Nan thinks she is honor-bound to another buyer for PGN, but she will talk to Shiv nonetheless. So through a phone call, Shiv confirms that Nan Pierce is in talks with their dad, Logan, that the offer to buy PGN is indeed from Logan, but also that Nan is at least interested in a face-to-face conversation with the kids. Roman is worried because Kendall just wants to fuck their dad, Shiv wants to fuck Tom, and he's the only one that wants to set up a business as a business and doesn't want to fuck anyone, as he puts it. At the restaurant with Logan and Colin, in a scene that I believe is meant to convey just how alone and pathetic Logan and his life actually are, we find out he really only sees people as economic units, which is both sad and funny, like most of this show. Logan asks Colin if he thinks there's an afterlife, stating that he himself thinks this life is probably all there is. He says, "We don't know. We can't know. But I've got my suspicions. I've got my fucking suspicions." It's definitely the strangest conversation in this final season premiere, this conversation with Logan and Colin. And it reads like Logan either suspects that there is nothing after this life, and that worries him because he's so close to the end, or he suspects there is some kind of judgment after this life, and that worries him because he's been a terrible monster of a person. Either one plays, really. Logan's assistant girlfriend Carrie calls Roman to ask if the kids will call their dad to wish him a happy birthday, and Shiv tells Roman to tell Carrie that he'd be able to hear her better if she took their dad's cock out of her mouth. The kids tell Carrie they would consider talking with Logan if he would call, but Carrie says, knowing Logan, it's unlikely he'll agree to call them, to which Roman responds, "I think we know him pretty well, actually. I mean, we've never licked his big omelet nipples," in another laugh-out-loud line. Back at the party, Connor pitches Willa on having a wedding underneath the Statue of Liberty with a brass band, a rapper, jetpacks, confetti guns, bum fights, and razor wire so that he can get inserted into the news cycle to save money rather than doing paid media. It's a genius plan, really. Connor says if he were to fall under 1%, he feels like he would become a laughingstock, which just further signals his total and utter lack of self-awareness, as obviously he is already a laughingstock. Greg approaches Tom and declares the disgusting brothers are on motherfucking tour before explaining that he and his date just did it. They were looking for the armory / cigar humidor when she pulled him into a room where he bingo bongo hit that bango. Tom explains that Greg is fucked because there is CCTV in every single room, security cameras, and Greg has inadvertently made Logan a sex tape. Plus, Logan watches all the footage back every night with a scotch. So, when Tom asks for details, Greg says that he and his date put their hands down each other's pants and had a bit of a rummage. And Tom asks, "Did you rummage to fruition?" before explaining that Greg needs to tell Logan what has happened before he sees it himself. Then Logan declares his birthday party is over because there is a rival bid for PGN in play, and he gathers his team to the library to flush it out. Carl approaches Logan with a bowl of candy to mind his blood sugar, as advised, and tells him the rival bidder is probably the kids, and of course, Logan starts to unravel. Then we get to see Greg tell Tom the story of how he broke it to Logan that he got jacked off in one of his guest bedrooms, apparently having told Logan, "She's a bit wild, she's quite eager, and, you know, maybe she'd had a bit of the old wacky tobacco or worse, and I never intended to soil these halls." Tom calls Greg's date a bit of a drug-addled cock monster, and apparently Logan's response to all this was to call Greg disgusting and despicable, but he kind of smiled. Then Colin tells Greg his date is going to have to leave because she's been posting on social media. Kendall, Shiv, and Roman arrive at the Pierce residence where Nan has a headache, so she's unsure if she actually wants to meet with them. I found it hilarious that two different groups in this episode flew great distances to meet with other groups and then were denied entrance initially and told they needed 5 minutes or whatever, like these Petro money guys that the Triumvant has waiting outside the entire time that never even actually comes inside. They travel the great distance. Then these three idiots fly to wherever to meet with Nan, and she won't even let them inside initially because she has a fucking headache. When she's finally ready to meet, Nan lets the kids know they have a preferred bidder already, and unfortunately, the other offer is just too good for her to consider anyone else. But Kendall tells her their dad is going to shit all over her company after he buys it, and Shiv assures Nan they can be competitive on price. Oh, and also that she's getting a divorce from the head of ATN, Tom, which is obviously massive, massive breaking news to us as an audience. Nan reconsiders taking an offer from the kids after the number $9 billion is floated, and thus begins the much speedier back and forth, final part of our episode. Don't be like Greg and air out your personal business for everyone. Use today's next sponsor, NordVPN. NordVPN is here to drastically enhance your web browsing experience and data security. No one likes to be watched or tracked, even if they have nothing to hide. That's why it's important you step up your privacy game whenever possible. If you aren't using a VPN right now, you're currently open to having your internet data creeped on in a big way. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network and is a service that protects your internet connection and privacy online. It creates an encrypted tunnel for your data, protects your online identity by hiding your IP address, allows you to use public Wi-Fi hotspots safely, and more. VPNs are the only way to be sure your real location and IP address are hidden, your online data is encrypted, and your web browsing history is invisible to your internet service provider and other third parties. Everybody who cares about their privacy should be using a VPN right now, and NordVPN is the best and fastest VPN provider in the business. NordVPN is software, not hardware. Super easy to use across every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS. All of them. Even your Android TV supports NordVPN. You can connect with just one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. I personally love NordVPN because if you travel abroad, finally get that vacation in, let's say, you can make sure you still have access to your favorite shows and movies from your home country on location-based streamers like HBO Max using NordVPN. And because at this point, I think it's important we all take our own steps to protect our privacy online. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/OCC to get a huge discount on your NordVPN plan, plus free threat protection, plus 4 months for free when you grab a two-year plan. There's a link for that deal in the description of this episode. That's nordvpn.com/OCC, code OCC for free threat protection plus 4 months for free when you grab a two-year plan. Thank you to NordVPN for supporting the Clam Fam and our online security here at Oystar Clam Co. So, on the Logan end of the bidding war for PGN, Tom is the middleman working the phone for Logan, while the kids are obviously there with Nan Pierce in person. Logan, in an effort to deal with his anxiety, he starts forcing his inner circle to make jokes and roast him, as he puts it. Frank starts by saying, "The thing about Logan is he's a tough old nut." And Logan then forces Greg to go, who says, without much hesitation, "You're mean. You're a mean old man. You're a mean old bastard, and you scare the life out of folks. That's your thing. You're scaring me right now, and that's why I don't even know what to do." Logan rebuts, "Who wants to smell Greg's finger, hey? Guess the scent. Win a buck. Come on, roast me." And Greg comes back with, where are your kids? Where's all your kids, Uncle Logan, on your big birthday?" Logan, clearly upset with that, fires back, "Well, where's your old man, huh? Where's your old man? Still sucking cock at the county fair?" Logan then decides that he's going to start his bidding war at $6 billion, even after 7 was the number that was floated, while the kids start at $8 billion, which turns this whole situation on its head. Nan labels the bidding war as disgusting, then talks it over with her people and lets the kids know they wonder if there's still a little more upside. And I think part of what is supposed to occur to us as an audience is just how casually these people are throwing around billions of dollars in capital, right? Tom calls Shiv and at Logan's behest, and Shiv and Tom try to feel each other out with where their ceiling is, which leads to the kids coming in at a whopping $10 billion in an effort to, quote, end the conversation. Tom immediately gets a phone call after the kids go in and pitch 10 that Nan Pierce is not accepting any other offers, that they're content and it's over. Logan is out. So a very disgruntled Logan Roy calls his three kids and says, "Congratulations on saying the biggest number, you fucking morons." Finally, Shiv goes home to her place in the city, where she wakes up Tom because their dog Mondale no longer recognizes her scent and barks at her, beginning the most depressing marriage conversation on the show thus far. Shiv calls out Tom for being labeled the disgusting brothers with Greg, accuses him of dating models now and getting buff for them, taking turns with Greg and asking if models sit on his face to shut him up. Do you really want to get into a full accounting of all the pain in our marriage? Tom asks. Because if you do, I can do that. Shiv says she wonders if there's even a way through this or if they might have run out of road. She doesn't even want to talk, saying she doesn't want to, quote, rake up a whole bunch of bullshit for no profit. And when Tom tries to get into things, she says, just stop. I don't think it's good for me to hear all that. She tells Tom she thinks it might be time for them to move on, to which Tom responds, that makes me sad. Tom offers to make love to Shiv. She declines. Then they lay down on their sorrowful, broken marriage bed, defeated, done, and hold hands to make things as sad as possible. Gave it a go, says Shiv. Yeah, we gave it a go, responds Tom. And then the episode ends with Logan watching ATN late night and calling Sid to tell her that the programming is bullshit and question whether or not she's losing it. Then the credits roll. And my read there was that after all that unfolds in this episode, between the three kids not being at his birthday party, between him questioning whether or not there's anything after this life or if this is it, between being outbid by his children to purchase PGN, which is clearly part of his master plan, whatever it may be, involving Gojo and the sale of this whole thing or lack thereof, he's shook. He's shook on several different levels. His wife, Marcia, is in Milan shopping forever. He's surrounded by people that he despises. And at this, you know, nearing the end of his life and his later years, I don't think he likes what he sees. And so it all kind of comes out with him watching his own network late night and then calling the head of it to, or I guess Tom might be technically the head of it. Maybe Tom is the head of it as a figurehead and Sid actually runs it. Who knows? We'll find out, I'm sure. But the point is he calls Sid to tell her basically that, like, I watch this. People watch this, and this is crap. This is shit. He shits all over the anchor, makes fun of his toupee and his head, and then just hangs up on her, right? And then the credits roll. So I thought that was a really good look into what exactly is going on in Logan's mind when this first episode is all said and done. Now, one of the other... I mean, outside of the obvious, you know, business stuff and all of the bidding war and whatnot, probably the most interesting part of the episode to me, especially as a guy who's been through a divorce, was watching what happened with Shiv and Tom. Now, we've been queued up for disaster with these two since their wedding night when Shiv asked Tom, or not asked him, basically told him, like, we're going to do an open marriage on their wedding night, the same wedding night where their older brother, was involved in the death of a waiter from their wedding. So, I mean, it's not like they ever seemed like they were on solid footing. This thing seemed like a total train wreck from the get-go. But from that moment to watching, you know, Tom eat his own jism to to watching them cheat on each other and everything that occurred in this episode, it's crazy to me that... I didn't think we'd get to see this unfold this quickly. I thought their marriage would further unravel throughout maybe the first episodes of the season or something, and then that would come into play somehow. Obviously, the other huge turning point for them was at the end of season three, when in the final episode is revealed that Tom is in fact the one who betrayed the Roy children by informing Logan of what they were attempting to do in regard to pushing him out and messing up his whole deal. So that seems like it was sort of the end of the rope for Shiv and Tom's marriage and everything between that and this, which doesn't feel like it's been that much time has passed, by the way, but everything between that and this has sort of just been a furthering of the same old issues. There, you know, Tom is out there getting buff for models and running around with the Disgusting Brothers crew. So that was a lot to see. I mean, to be honest with you, just as a man, I'm a little bit more... my natural instinct is to hate Shiv and kind of blame her. I feel like she never gave Tom a chance. She put him in a terrible spot from the get-go, asking him if he wanted to be in an open marriage on their wedding night, saying a lot of the lines that she said to him over the years, like, you know I'm better than you and you love me anyway and I don't even love you, and then trying to pass that off as foreplay and all the other crazy shit that she has done, just like extremely toxic stuff that I think is supposed to be a reveal into just how similar Shiv is to her father, Logan, right? then underneath it all, she is this heartless, cold, and calculated sociopath just like he is. And Tom, you know, he's not exactly the brightest crayon in the box. He's a despicable jackass for sure. I mean, he runs around with Greg. They're the disgusting brothers. But he did seem like underneath it all, he really, really loved Shiv, really, really cared for her, unlike the way she clearly felt about him. So it's confusing when it's all said and done that she seems to be emotionally broken up by their breakup. He kind of holds it together and is realistic about it. Maybe he had already sort of accepted it. My personal opinion is that he probably had accepted it before he made the decision to betray her, right? I mean, after all, earlier on in this episode, he is asking Logan to his face, hey, just hypothetically, if me and Shiv are to get a divorce, where does that leave you and I? And I don't think he's asking that question unless he's pretty sure what's coming, right? So, and before that even, you know, teeing things up with the phone call to Shiv to tell her, like, hey, I was having dinner with or a meal or a date or social gathering with the Pierce that Kendall was dating, which ironically I think is one of the things that got the wheels turning in Shiv's mind and tipped her off to the fact that her dad was trying to buy PGN, which kicks off the whole bidding war, which Tom skates around pretty well, by the way, when it gets brought up in the inner circle of Logan Roy and they ask, how the hell did the kids know that this was happening? And Tom's like, oh, come on, everybody knows that PGN is open for sale, like that they're up to hearing offers. But yeah, not the best marriage in television history between Tom and Shiv, not the healthiest relationship I've ever seen unfold in a story. But very sad still, even with a total lack of love, really a total lack of high points in their marriage throughout the three seasons and now one episode that we've seen so far of this series, you still find yourself, or at least I did, sort of heartbroken for them. Like, oh man, you got like, no, they really shit the bed here. They really made a lot of bad decisions in a row and never really had their arms wrapped around this thing, it would seem. And I feel like that's probably the way it is for a lot of married couples that sort of do it because they think it's the next thing they're supposed to do, right? Not really doing it for the right reasons, if you will. Not to throw a bachelor, bachelorette term in there. But I feel like that's pretty common to sort of wade out into the waters of marriage without a real clue as to what it is you're looking to accomplish or why you're even there in the first place. And then the next thing you know, it is so far gone that you can't even stop to, like, there's, like Shiv was saying, there's almost no point in talking and doing the whole crying and talking through everything because what at the end of the day, we both know what's going to happen, right? So sad stuff, powerful stuff, and just a hell of an end to the first episode of this final season. Don't let your dog start to dislike you like Shiv has with Mondale. Use today's sponsor, Maeve. Did you know that a dog eating kibble every single day is like a human consuming a diet of 100% processed foods? No matter your species, fillers, additives, and synthetics are not optimal sources of nutrition. Enter Maeve Raw Food for Dogs, formulated by PhD veterinary nutritionists with real human-grade ingredients you can name just by looking at. Plus, it's bite-sized and ready for your dog to eat right out of the bag. No mess, no prep, just open, pour, and enjoy. I've got four dogs at home, two of them right next to me here in the studio, and I love them the same way that I love my kids. So I want them to have the best, and I'm sure you do with your dogs too. Dogs need unprocessed, high-protein, low-carb diets that kibble and fresh foods don't deliver. Maeve is a protein-rich raw food for dogs that's just as easy as kibble, and it's supplemented for 7 essential health benefits, including gut health, immune function, oral hygiene, skin and coat health, hip and joint health, mental health and anxiety, and growth in early development. People love Maeve. They have over 1,000 five-star reviews, and so do their dogs, especially those notorious picky eaters. Make the switch to raw today. Right now, Maeve is offering $40 off your first purchase at meetmaeve.com/dragon. Go to meetmaeve.com/dragon. That's spelled meetmaeve.com/dragon to receive $40 off your first order. Once more, that's Maeve, meetmaeve.com/dragon. Okay, so my impression with the ending of this episode and the ending of the big back and forth bidding war and Logan's response is that the kids, quote, sang the biggest number, as Logan put it, means absolutely nothing in reality. And that all they've done is just start a war with their dad or entered the next phase of the four-season war with their dad, I suppose. All in all, though, this was a fantastic first episode to kickstart Succession's final season, full of hilarious banter between Greg and Tom, plus a new label for the boys as the Disgusting Brothers. We got to address the marital issues between Tom and Shiv and continue the despicable chemistry between Kendall, Shiv, and Roman. I can't wait to see where things go from here. We all know it's going to be a total shit show. And like I said, I have a feeling that things between the Pierces and the Roys are far from over. Plus, we know Mattson, played by a Skarsgård, and the Gojo deal are still in the wings, and we are surely set for at least one more total blow-up from Kendall before it all ends. This episode was interesting from the Kendall perspective. Pretty low-key Kendall episode, as far as Kendall episodes go, right? He was heavily involved, but relatively stable. I mean, albeit idiotic, but he didn't fly off the handle, didn't do anything, you know, really all that insane, as the hierarchy of insane Kendall things goes. And that had me thinking a lot about what goes down with him longer term. So who will betray who? Where will the chips fall? Does Roman end up back on Team Logan before it's all said and done? A lot of people are waiting for that to happen, for Roman to be the turncoat who goes back to his daddy. Will Kendall's involvement in the death of that waiter from season one come back into play somehow? That feels like it was always this big thing set up in the background for us to wait to see what would happen with it, right? Does Marcia remain shopping in Milan forever? I mean, the second I heard that line, I figured like, wow, that was an easy way to write her out of the show. But the more I've thought about it since then, I think it may have just been a setup for more to come from her potentially. Like, she just seemed to be so heavily involved, right? There was all that talk in season one, as far back as season one, about getting her an extra board vote or whatever in the case of Logan's demise. I just feel like something from her is going to come back into play at some point here. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds, and we are so very stoked to have all of you here with us to see it inevitably go up in flames. I do stand by my take that I do not think Logan Roy makes it out of this season alive, and I think that conversation with his best pal Colin in the restaurant about what comes after this life really even furthered that stance for me. And I think him dying of natural causes would be kind of a cop-out. So I hope they've got something more devious and potentially disastrous in mind. But Succession is back, baby. The Disgusting Brothers. Support our sponsors. We'd appreciate it if all season long you would support our sponsors by using our dedicated URLs and codes, as that is how we pay the piper here at Oystar Clam Co. Today's sponsors are available in the description of this episode, so don't hesitate. Click those links. Use those codes for deals and discounts. And if you are looking for more coverage of Succession's final season, remember, we do an exclusive ad-free episode every week driven by hotline calls from the Oystar Clam Co. board members on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Subscribe on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for as little as $5 a month to support our show and enjoy so much more exclusive OCC content ad-free. When you join, you'll immediately gain access to our entire backlog of episodes, including all of our The Last of Us Season 1 hotline call episodes, as well as bonus coverage for season one of House of the Dragon, season two of The White Lotus, and you'll gain access to our entire companion podcast for HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, friendly to first-timers and rewatchers alike. That's on top of all our bonus coverage of Succession's final season. And again, it's patreon.com/oystersclamscockles to support the show and gain access to those exclusive ad-free episodes. If you are watching The Mandalorian's new season, check out Children of the Watch, hosted by two friends of our show, with the best Star Wars podcast in the galaxy, Children of the Watch, available wherever you're consuming OCC. Plus, if you're an F1 fan, check out Bolin Media's premier F1 programming from Formula Bone at youtube.com/@FormulaBone and @FormulaBone on all social media. And finally, for more from me, Ross Bolin, listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played, or watch on youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast. Follow me at @WRBolin. Oh, and go get the hat I am wearing at bolinmedia.com/shop. Grab yourself some merch. I will be back Thursday with Barrett Dudley to further digest and discuss this episode on Patreon. But thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching today's episode. Video of today's episode, as it were, is produced by Cade Orris. And if you've never watched our show before, you can do so in full on youtube.com/@OystersClamsCockles. Please subscribe. And until next time, fuck off.